Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, so I've been working through people I said would get back on the show, and there's been quite a people that, a lot of people who wants to get back, but someone that kind of sprung to the top of the list is my next guest because of a recent announcement they made and a project they're getting involved in, which is like super excited. So it's nice to welcome to the show again, Thomas from Tailgunner. How are we doing, sir?
Hey man, good to speak to you again. Good to be back
It's
on.
it's nice to get people back on because we never cover enough stuff. Especially, I mean, the last time we did one was with everybody, was all of Tailgunner, so I had to kind of like bup, 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 get through stuff really quickly. Like, so you've had last year for you, fuck, before we get into this new thing, last year for you was just, have you had chance to catch your breath, like?
No. I thought I would after the first leg of the tour. I was like, yeah, I've got a little bit of time off and then Christmas and whatever. It's like, it's going to be really nice to sit down and relax and take a break before next year. And you know what it's like, it's you don't get time because all of a sudden you have to sort everything else out for 6 months off or whatever. And it's things that you don't even think of, just logistics of touring and speaking to production managers for I want this pyro and whatever random shit it is that you had to deal with when you thought you might just be able to sit down and relax, but I can't complain.
It's been there, yeah. I mean, I like I said before on the show, and I've said before in posts that I've done. You just, you're very much a for me a case study of how to operate as a band. You know how to, yes, your band should be good, and have a whole bunch of great songs. That's a given. That's an absolute given. It should be the case. But there's a whole other world of how you act and how you deal with your fans and how you work with people that in the business. That's the, that's such a good example of how to do it, sir. You know, I mean,
No, I appreciate it.
I've had you guys on the shows a few times and various members on the show, and it's always been something that a lot of people have messaged me and said, "Fucking hell, I didn't think of doing this or I didn't think of doing that. Now I'm going to do that because I didn't realize how important it was, particularly being social media. A lot of bands got in touch were like, fucking hell, the presence that they have and how they conduct themselves and not acting like children on there, if you know what I mean, and kind of, looking like a pro band before they're even a pro band, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? It's that, and it's that's so important. And I think that that's probably one of the reasons for your success this year, I think.
Yeah, I think so. It's the old fake it till you make it sort of thing, but it's not just that as well. It's like someone said to me ages ago, like when before Tailgunner started, is if you want to be a professional musician, don't wait until you're professional to act like it. Act like it right from the very start, and then it's a lot
100%.
more likely to happen, and it sounds so obvious, but like until someone said that to me, it's like, God, they're right. Do you know what I mean? Treat it like a job, and then it's far more likely to become one.
And it's hard because, ladies and gentlemen, we've been in bands. We want to be wild. You want to play your music and fucking get drunk and all this other stuff that you think goes with it. But you forget that that's like, that's 10% of it. The rest of it is a shitload of traveling, a ton of bad food, and just endless work. And now with like social media, it's good and bad because yes, you can instantly talk to your fans and instantly put out a video and all kinds of bits and pieces, but you do have to do that now because it's kind of part of the game. That is how you do it. And the biggest secrets, I suppose, in the business is that that's what labels and stuff are looking for is almost a finished article. They don't want to look at someone they have to
Exactly.
plow time into or go, well, we're gonna have to get these guys matured and up to speed a bit. They don't want that. I've spoke to many label bosses, and Brian Slagle from Metal Blade, and he's like, you're looking for a band that knows who they are straight away. And that was the that's the biggest thing that I've got from listening to you guys. But let's get to the real meat of why we're here. Not content with having so much fucking free time. Tom's only gone and decided to make a big and bold move. His announcement surprised me, not because I was like surprised that you were doing it, but I was like, where does he get his time to do this? I was like, the man's mad. But I think, I'll let you tell the folks at home what the project is. But for me, it's probably because you just really love this business and you really love doing it. It's obvious. So for those that maybe didn't see the announcement, what is it you're going to be doing and starting this year?
So this is something that I've had, you know, fizzling away in the background since 2020. Just for context, like I took a couple of years out before starting Tailgunner, as you know, to learn as much as I possibly could about the music industry, just to prepare myself better for launching a band. And I learned so much in those couple of years. And since launching Tailgunner, I mean, I act as like the manager, the booking agent in the UK, and all sorts of bits and pieces. And I've learned so much in the last 2 years since Tailgunner has been out there that I thought, there's a lot of people out there that will offer services to bands. Say, for example, PR specialists. And those sorts of people will charge X amount, whether you're just starting out or whether you're like a big signed international band, the price is the price sort of thing. And a lot of the time, that's not suited to the individual needs of bands that are starting out, or maybe they've been going a while, but they're trying to take the next step. The other part of it is I truly believe that up until a certain point, that the hardest thing to do in the industry is go from being a local band to a national band or an international band. You know, then you get into, can you get in the charts? And there's all sorts of different pressures and things. But I do believe that, you know, it's a bit like I describe it as in Back to the Future with the DeLorean. It's the hardest part is getting from 0 to 80, and everything after that it seems to sort of snowball.
You know? Sure.
So that's what this business that I'm setting up is here to do. It's basically, as opposed to the other people that are out there that will offer services and help for bands, this is something that's aimed to newer bands or bands that are trying to take the next step and maybe are struggling with certain things, where I can come in, not have a blanket approach, which doesn't work in the music business because everyone's got a different story, you know. Come in, see where bands are at and see what I can do to fit in and help out. And that can be anything from, you know, social media management. It can be help booking for tours. It can be something as big as day in, day out management. And it's really tailored to what are the needs of that band at that time, using the experience that I've had from Tailgunner. And the other side of it is, you know, without meaning to be too cocky, there's a lot of people out there that are very talented people that do know exactly what they're doing and everything. That's not a dig at anyone else that's out there, but no one that's actually been in a band and has done it like I have, as quick as I have, or as recent as I have. You know, the music industry is constantly changing, but we've at least got, you know, a level of success in the last year or two, you know. So it's still very, very relevant what my experience is and what help I can bring to bands.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, because that's good. I mean, there'll be people listening and going, well, my band doesn't sound like Tailgunner, or it isn't in that particular part of metal in that day. And that, I understand that, but you're 100% right. In order to get there, there's some basic things that need to be in place, irrespective of which genre you are within metal. There is an enormous amount of kind of background work that you talk about, like, you know, that most people don't even consider, you know. And All you've presented with Tailgunner very beautifully is a case study. Here's a case study of a thing that I was doing that I wanted to do, get to this stage, and here is the proof that I have done it. You know, it's as simple as that. And that's incredibly powerful, because there's going to be a lot of people, ladies and gentlemen, that let's call them opinion skills. So let's say that. So that they basically they'll have a lot of opinions about how your music should sound and what you should be doing. And you go, okay, well, I'll listen to your opinion, but what grounding is this? You know, like if you've got one plumber, if tonight your boiler broke and you wanted a plumber, one of the things you would do is you would go and you would look at all the plumbers in your area and see reviews for them. And, you know, if you put pictures up, I don't know, of a fucking boiler, I don't know, whatever. There's a ton of plumbers out here who have just switched off now. They're like, fuck you, Coop, you don't know our business. But you would look first, and the people who have done, that normally is a good precedent for helping you get it done yourself. You know, it sounds very obvious, but there's going to be a lot of people, ladies and gentlemen, especially in your young band, who will approach you and go, well, I'll manage your band, or I will sign you to my label, or whatever it is, I will become your booking agent, with no history at all, with no history. It's a load of bollocks. They just talk a load of old shit because they want to, you know, in the trade, we have what we call rock star roadies, where it's guys and girls who just want to be side of stage and just want to say that they're on a tour bus and don't actually want to do all the work that's required. There's rock star promoters and rock star record label guys that don't give a fuck. You know, I mean, Tom's very kind and nice and wouldn't mention anybody, and I wouldn't mention anybody personally, but we all know the history of music's littered with bands getting the shaft, and from bands who just want to be involved in the scene, and really shouldn't be, because they're inexperienced. If, for example, if you're an extremely inexperienced manager, then what you're doing, Tom, is probably the best thing in the world. Going, okay, well, I'll start with my own band. I'll start looking after my own shit. Make that work. Get some basic parameters in, some basic rules, some things that I can apply, and then start moving on from there, getting hold of another band and looking and working with them. And the word you're looking for, I think, this sums up your approach, is going to be bespoke. That whichever band you come up to, you're going to go, okay, well, I know what the parts are, but they're going to fit together differently because your band is, you know, is this or is whatever it may be.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because, you know, you can be in a certain position as a local band or something, and you may think, okay, the thing that I need to do to get to the next level, just say, for example, to get on Planet Rock, is to hire a radio plugger that will come in or charge you a small fortune to do it. And they could be the best radio plugger in the world, but they can't guarantee your results. And that's the first thing, is anyone in the industry that says, guarantee you this is talking shit. No one can. And the other thing is, it's not necessarily about that. It's like you said, in terms of like getting a record deal or something, it's about having everything in place that's then scalable. So what this is that I'm, you know, coming in and doing with bands is, let's get the foundations in place so that you can go and grow. Because it's not just a case of getting you on the radio or getting a record deal or anything. This is about really getting everything together as your band so that you can take the next step. And that's, you know, like I said, there's different people out there that will charge a fortune for different services and things that bands may not be ready for. And we all know that there's a million different things that you need to go and do as an artist. And this is like really making sure that you take the right steps at the right time.
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, me and you've both been involved in the business a long time. And a lot of this sounds obvious, ladies and gentlemen, making the right decisions, the right time, you know, investing in what you're doing correctly. But we know that bands are in such a hurry to become, in inverted commas, famous or signed, that the ramifications of the stuff that they're doing in order to attain that is incredibly dangerous. You know, I mean, there's the very obvious examples of people signing contracts that they shouldn't be signing for things that they don't understand. We talked about it on the show with the music solicitor, that, you know, what exactly is a 360 deal and how that can really affect a manager and cuts of merch and all this type of thing. You know, it's these things that, you know, people, there's still, unfortunately, even with all this information and people like yourself out there helping bands, there's still that, okay, we just need to get signed and then we'll be Metallica. And it's like, wow, that's like, we just need to get to the moon, so I'll look up.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, I do think, and, you know, I'm guilty of it as well growing up, everyone is, until you have enough information where you think that if you get, for example, a record deal, then you'll be big. A record label cannot make your band big, because no one in the world can force people to like your music. You know, what it has to be is, I've got so many people that like my music that want to buy my record. I really need someone to make this record and to advertise it for me and to make sure it's in the shops. Because otherwise, and you see it, you know, it does happen, is a band can get a record deal and then they expect to be at a certain level. And it just doesn't work like that, even if you're on the biggest label in the world, you know.
Yeah. Well, if that's it, it's that managing of expectations, isn't it? You hear about it with one of the common things that I encounter with bands is that they pay someone to do some form of campaign or an advertisement of a particular thing, be it an album or whatever the hell it is. And you're 100% right. You're not paying for results because they are almost, you know, it's magic. It's still magic. It's still this, you know, this unknown territory. All you're doing is saying, okay, we'll take this amount of ads in this press and we'll do this. You're just paying them for that there, you know, that one thing. And ultimately, if your song sucks or your album is awful, you know, you can only flog it. You know, look at like how much money you think went into like St. Anger by Metallica. Let's have a look at that as an example. How much money went into that album? Millions, probably. Millions. Way more than the cost to make it. Way more than the cost to fucking do it. It probably got absolutely... And it's widely believed to be one of the worst, you know, the least favourite Metallica albums, for example. But they still did that because, you know, they believed in what they were doing. But they knew that, I'm sure at some point, Hetfield goes, okay, well, this is fucking not going to... It's not the next Black album, lads. It's not going to be there. And they reconvened and redid that. I think one of the things that you find with bands is that they're not as honest maybe as they can be with their materials. Like, look, does this work? Yes or no? No, it doesn't. Okay, something needs to change. Otherwise, the results aren't going to change.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. Like, I was speaking to someone the other day that he specializes in like social media advertising and you know, like things through with Spotify and that side of things. He's very, very good at what he does. And he was saying, I speak to bands all the time and I always give them a reminder that, yes, I'm very good at what I do. And yes, I can take your money and I can set all this up for you. And he said, nothing I do works unless your song is great. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's the thing as well, that I think this isn't what I'm coming in to do because I'm not doing it from an A&R sort of perspective. Yeah. But I definitely think before bands get involved with any spending of any money for anyone, including myself, you've got to be brutally honest, you know, with yourself. And you have to really sit down and go, you know, if I wasn't in this band, if I didn't write this song and I heard this, would it blow me away? Would I put it in a playlist? Would I go back to it? Would I find out who this band is and whatever? Yeah. And that's such an important part of it. Mm. At the same time, if you truly believe in what you're doing and you really do, you know, listen to everything that I said there and think, yeah, like, actually, I do believe that, then I think I am someone that can help, because I go back to before we launched Tailgunner, I actually paid to have like an A&R style meeting with guys that weren't working for a record label. One of them is a very successful PR agent, works with some massive bands and everything. And the other one is an artist who I won't name names, but was on the first album I ever bought. And I spoke to them. This is, you know, as I said before, I launched Tailgunner, I sent over some demos and everything. This is what it is. This is what I want to do. And they said, I think you need to go away and rethink things, and this will not work out as successful as you think it might do.
Yeah.
And I completely respected their opinion, but I truly believed in what I was doing.
Yeah.
So there is a balance to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's an element of you pushing through and doing something you believe in, but you're not, like you say, you're not silly enough to go to take those people. You've got to take those people seriously. You've got to go, okay, they raised 3 or 4 points about what was going on. Maybe I could address them. Exactly. Maybe I can look at and change some things, you know, but I still believe what I've got. You know, but I would raise this to you, Tom, that if you went the entirety of last year playing, I don't know, let's say a handful of shows and the album got launched and it wasn't very well received sort of from a streaming point of view, you would sit and you would honestly debate what was going on. Of course you would. And that's that kind of brutal honesty. I think that can sometimes be hard to find. As crazy as it sounds, ladies and gentlemen, brutal honesty that's constructive as well, that's honest, like, I don't think this is good because of this, and I think this could be better because of this, is quite hard to find. You know, a lot of people, when they come off stage, you know, when you go, your band's amazing, it's like the worst critique you can give, because it's like, I fucking know, because I'm fucking in it, and yeah, I'm playing the shit out of this tonight.
Well, the thing is as well, like, you'll know... People don't need to say that for you to know. You'll know if they're jumping around and singing along and everything. If they're stood there texting their mate or whatever, and you've got a face, you go, that was amazing. It wasn't.
It wasn't. No. But that's, like, there's two sort of really interesting things come up here. One of the first things is, now we live in a time where you really are against everybody else in terms of level of quality. You are against the next Metallica album, the next Maiden album, the next whatever album. You are against that. You know, say, someone's going to listen to your album, two or three songs are going to switch to someone else. That someone else could be an established artist, been around for 30 years, and it will be, and your shit has to at least fucking go toe to toe with it. Otherwise, it's just, you know, no one cares if it's a new band or that band's been going 20. No one cares. A good song will out. So you used to be the case that you'd because pre-internet, you'd play in a pub and some band would blow you away or you'd blow them away. Yeah. You do a couple of longer shows and then you play a festival and someone would fucking take your head off at a festival. You're like, shit, we've got a lot of work to do. That's happening now almost immediately. You know, that the levels just rose straight away really, really quickly. And it's killed a lot of bands straight away because they're I'm not as good as that. And that's tough as well. It's good and bad. There's elements to it.
Definitely. I think there's a flip side where, you know, we can all be positive about it. And I use Ghost as an example. Like, doesn't matter if you're a fan of Ghost or not really. It's they played, they started in the MySpace era and they put out a demo of, I think it was a couple of tracks.
Yeah.
And it was actually a guy called Oliver that booked us to keep it true. I think he has another festival that he runs, and he put on their first ever gig because all Ghost did, all like Tobias Forge did, because I think he was playing everything on it, was put two tracks on MySpace, and collectively a lot of people in the industry went, oh shit, because it was there straight away.
Yeah.
And there's something I admit I'm not actually the biggest Ghost fan myself, but something I absolutely love is when they started, they already had all the costumes and all the rest of it. And there's a video you can watch from, it's their second ever show. And they're playing the Live Evil Festival, Live Evil Festival in London, when that was a thing. And they played the Camden Underworld. And it's fucking brilliant. Someone's filming and they come out on stage and like second ever gig. And he comes out and he's got, you know, the whole get up and everything.
Yeah.
And he's swinging the, you know, whatever it is that priests think that the
yeah, burns the and incense, everything. The incense.
I'm not a religious fan. I don't know. Anyway, he walks out on stage and you hear someone stood next to the guy filming go, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that moment of like, they were going to be an arena band in that moment. It,
100%. It,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. So they knew what they were. Straight away, they got it right straight away. But I dare say, I bet you Tobias, and you're welcome to talk about this on the show if you want, my friend. But I reckon they, in his mind, at least, maybe on paper, maybe in discussion, they went through a number of things before they unveiled what they were going to become. I'm sure there was conversations. I bet you there's loads of songs you'll never hear where you're like, let's just get it right. Is this enough ABBA? Is it not enough ABBA? Do we do that? But there's been a couple of these great examples. Like, you know, let's look at like Sleep Token, the speed and the ascension of them. You know, in a genre that was like, that no one would have said was popular, even amongst metalheads, they were like, what? This is kind of like, what's this? This isn't where the next. And then the look and how they produced themselves is all carefully constructed because they understood what they were. Look at Spirit Box. You know, Spirit Box, you know, didn't really kind of fit in with anything. It kind of just blew up and they just marketed and produced themselves the correct way, you know, and made some really interesting calls. And they go and blow up. Look at from our local band, Loathe. Look at them, you know, fully understanding what they are. And then once you understand what you are, the reason I mention this is that then that flows out into everything. It flows out into your logos. It flows out into your merch. It flows out into your stage show. Once you understand what you want to do, it's all about execution then. You know, it's all about kind of, okay, we're this type of band. Well, this is what's expected. So when I went to see Tailgun, ladies and gentlemen, saw them at the Outpost, I wasn't surprised. I wasn't like, oh, this, I didn't expect this. It felt totally complete. And I said to Sammy, and I think I said on the show, actually, that, you know, I think you may be a year away from, maybe less, from supporting an arena band at an arena show because it was all there. you know, and I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I think ultimately, if I had to give any advice to bands, you know, advice is cheap, like, but is understanding oneself and then the execution thereof is so important. You know, is that going to be where you start? When, so let's say, for example, a band will come to you now. I suppose the first question is, how do you want, or will you want to be approached? If I was a band and I wanted to approach you, I think I had a project, I think I'd like to be involved.
So, I mean, that really is in any way that they like and feel comfortable with. And another side, I think that, you know, it's worth mentioning with this is I'm not one of those people that are charging just for a consultation. You know, yeah. I'll speak to anyone completely for free. They can tell me where they're at, what's going on, what the aims are for the next year, what they're struggling with and whatever. And I'll be honest and say, okay, I think that I fit in here, you know. So just contact me, you know, you can message me on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. I'm yet to set up. This is still such early days. I haven't got a business email or anything. That'll be coming. But just hit me up and let's chat, and you know, we can go from there.
Yeah, it's going to be like, you know, the reason there isn't, like you were saying, the reason there isn't one size fits all is because there's not one band fits all. It doesn't work like that. And what Tom's talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is an honest conversation about where you are, where you want to be, and how you will get there. And that sounds like, you know, like the most simplest thing in the world, but it's one of those things that until you bring an outside party in, it's quite hard to kind of even put your finger on it, you know, and kind of even understand what you want to be, you know, until Tom will say something like, I'd see it as being this or potentially this. You know, a lot of bands don't understand that. Maybe we've demified producers and demified management, because let's keep it positive. There are an enormous amount of quality management out there and quality yeah. booking. You know, I work with a ton of management and booking teams that are just like me. They're just a fan that really loves the music and just wants to help their scene. They play in a band made themselves, but they just want to help. And it's that kind of, you know, there are good people out there, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I've seen Tom Acho talking to fans about this very thing. They're like, oh, I'm in a band and blah, blah, blah. And giving this advice out there, you know, there are good people out there doing some great things. And all I think, you know, we need to do is just to try and increase the amount of good people so we can force out the bad. You know, it's have you got a number in your head of how many bands you think you'd work with? Have you got it? Are you going to kind of just keep going and see how far it goes with it? Or is there a finite number to how many you might take on?
No, so this really is dependent on the needs of each band. I mean, look, thankfully, you know, people do want to talk to me and want my advice and things. I've been dead busy. So I've been working. So far, I've spoken to about 8 bands. And I've got about another 15 scheduled in. And I will do that to the point where I think, okay, I'm so busy that I can't, you know, genuinely invest the hours to help whoever's yeah. next. However, a lot of the time, what it will be is we'll have a call, see where I fit in. For some bands, that might be on a rolling sort of basis, a rolling contract where they'll, you know, I'll be with them month by month
yeah.
and go, this is where we are this month, this is where we are this month, and regularly check in and help them that way. For other bands, it might be we've got an EP coming out and we want to make sure that we get the most out of it. And I go, okay, this is my plan for your EP. Do this in the next 3 months. There you go, and on your way, and feel free to come back and pick my brains if you need to when it starts. So it really is dependent, you know.
Yeah. That's one of the things, ladies and gentlemen, every band from small to large to, you know, arena size and everything in between, it's not unusual in the business to jump from different people doing different things, like a marketing campaign, and there's nothing wrong with that. One of the things that a band came to me and they were telling me about a promotional campaign that a particular company was launching that was 2 years long, Thomas.
Wow.
I was like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So for 2 years, you're going to pay them until you see the end result after 2 years. And if it's not what you want, what you've wasted. That's insanity. Bands can, and I recommend they do, try different companies. And the ones that they work with, works well, they stay with. And I think you're totally approaching it the right way. That rolling sort of contract thing is like, you know, look, let me come and fix your boiler. And if your boiler works, then, you know, I'll maybe fix another boiler for you. And it's, because it's a two-way street. It's like, look, it has to be both ways.
Sort of unusual for me anyway. I mean, the general idea is that, you know, someone will come to me and say, this is what's coming up, this is what I want, and like I'll write out that plan for them. And it will be as detailed as, on Monday you're gonna do this, on Tuesday you're gonna do this, and they cover the next month, 2 months, 3 months or something. You know, the rolling contract thing is a bit more specific, and that wasn't something I necessarily planned when I started this, but I felt like that's what, you know, those certain bands wanted and needed and what was best for them. And so if I can fit it all in, then I'm happy to do it, basically.
There's some, you know, inarguable truths to kind of campaigns and launches and tours and stuff. And one of them is it's time, commitments and execution. So it's like, you know, it sounds silly, but yeah, writing up like a timetable of doing things. Because you get stuff done, you know. It's these type of sort of holding bands accountable to that is where bands move forward. You know, where they go, okay, look, this is the campaign. I say this a lot to bands when I say, "What's your social media campaign and strategy?" And most bands like go, "The strategy? Like, what the fuck?" And I'm like, "Okay, but what's your plan this week? What are you releasing? What do you want to say on social media? How often are you posting it? When are you posting it?" These things are real. These things are real, tangible stuff.
I think,
and it's just that discipline to stick to a plan that I find a lot of management comes in with.
I think one thing as well that, you know, from speaking to bands so far, that a lot of people really struggle with is I say you've got to post every single day on social media, because that's what's worked for us. That's what works for a lot of bands. You know, you can post 2-3 times a week or every other day or whatever. Still effective. It's not as effective as every single day. And a lot of bands say, I don't know what to post when there's nothing going on. You know, I need something to happen so I can post about it. And it's like, that's not the name of the game. It's you need to post so something happens, and then it bounces back and forth and it snowballs, you know. And that's something that I'm very good at, and I can definitely help bands with, is, okay, you've got nothing going on at the moment. I can still create your plan so that you're posting every single day, so that the people that you want to work with, people that book for festivals, or that promoter in your city that brings through the touring band that you want to jump on the support slot for or whatever, can look at your social media and go, okay, they're happening. You know, even if you're not releasing music or you're not doing a great many gigs or something, you've still, you know, you've got to treat social media as like, you can cultivate an identity for your band and make it fun and make it something that, you know, if you were a fan, you could just sit on their social media and go, that's fucking interesting, or like, that's cool to read about, you know. And social media doesn't have to be, we're playing Thursday night here and like, you know, tickets are this much, or like next month we're doing this. It's like, post about anything. Post about like, you know, oh, I really like this album at the moment. What album are you listening to? And like, and then it starts conversation with your fans. And then all of a sudden it's like, you've created that experience with someone where you're like, I was talking to this band the other day and we were discussing the seventh track on Iron Maiden's fucking Seventh Son of a Seventh Son or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And then that creates a little bit of a thing. And then even aside from the music, they just feel more inclined to go and see you or whatever, because you've built that personal connection. And that's the way that I think as an artist, especially starting out, you should treat social media and create this movement, basically. I mean, that's what we with the whole putting British heavy metal back on the map sort of thing. If no one's ever heard our music, they can still go, well, I know what Tailgunner are about, you know.
Yeah. Well, they feel it's developed, like you say, developing that connection. So, you like, we've all seen Pulp Fiction, and Pulp Fiction is a series of stories with people in it. And if when he was selling the story, Quintantino. He was like, we've got John Travolta in it. And he was like, they were like, okay, great, brilliant. John Travolta's a big name. That's great. But we kill him off straight away, almost like he dies like midway through. And the guy was like, well, hold on, what do you mean? Does he come back at the end? And he's like, yeah. And what he'd done with the various roles, like, you know, Bruce Willis's role is almost throwaway. But if you watch it as part of a whole, now you care about that guy. So yeah. When Vincent comes in and says to Mia, you know, oh, she goes, oh, thanks for last night. You know what she was talking about because you've just seen her and you're more invested. He's not just hood number one or thug number two. And she's not just Moll's girlfriend. There's a thing behind it. So now when I go to see Tailgunner, I've watched you do a video of you walking around the show and funny things that you might have seen. And I'm like, I know Tom. I know him. I know what songs he likes. Yeah. And I feel, so when I see him now, I'm like, hey man, fucking love your band. You know, it's straight away. I'm invested.
You know, you're at a show and you're listening to, you know, whatever song it is. And you go, well, I know that song was inspired because this guy went to this show and listened to this song, you know, and that's the bigger part. If you bang on the social media or whatever, go, you know, you're watching a band and go, I know what he had in Burger King earlier today. And like that for me as a fan, and it sounds really like mundane and maybe that's not for everyone, but I like to know the throwaway bullshit. I think that's
100%.
The most interesting part. Like, the thing as well that I try to drum into people is you're in a band, you do pretty much the coolest thing in the world other than maybe being a Premier League footballer. Do you know what I mean? A lot of people, like, it doesn't matter what level you're at, whether you're playing Download Festival or you're just, you know, a local band, you're doing something that 99% of people will be like, that's dead cool. Do you know what I mean? And the things that you consider to be the really mundane, throwaway bullshit of being in a band, it's really interesting to a lot of people. Yeah. And all you've got to do is capture it and post about it because, you know, if I'm watching something about Guns N' Roses or whatever, I want to know what Axel has on his fucking sandwiches backstage. Do you know what I mean? Like,
if Maiden come out with a new song, say Maiden come out with a new song tomorrow, and there's a video with it and everything, but also there's a 45-minute behind-the-scenes thing, of, I don't know, Dave Murray going fishing or something, I bet you that gets more views. Because I'm like, I want to, what the fuck, what do they do when they're not doing what they do? And what is that world like? And, you know, I love those videos where people are like, look, this is a day in the life of what I'm doing. You know, I get up and I do that. I fucking love, do you know, I know that that's a good thing now. I've seen a recent trend on social media where a band do this. They show someone on the tour bus waking up or having a coffee or finishing a meal, going from the bus through the venue, all the way through the venue, and then coming out into a massive sold-out crowd.
Yeah.
That only works because I want to know what it's like backstage. Well, it did. Yeah, I want to know all that shit, you know?
The thing as well is you got to remember when you're starting out as a band or you're at the local level or whatever, the people that are the early adopters, the people that are going to be your first fans and the first people to champion you are the people that are music nerds. Do you know what I mean? Are people like me and you. You're kind of Radio 1 listener or, you know, whatever, they don't care until you're at that level. The people that, the first people to get into you that are going to share your music, that are going to buy your tickets when you're playing at the bar down the road, are probably musicians themselves, or at least the people that bang into music, you know, and they're the people that are really interested in, like, what did you do in the sound check, or like, you know, it's like with Tailgunner, we made a big effort on the last tour and things to capture every moment. And, you know, they're the things that, you know, had a lot of the views from the tour. And one of the things we did when we opened for KK's Priest and that whole situation happened was we did a video of, do you want to know what it's like to walk on stage in front of 2,000 people? And it was like that moment of coming down from the dressing room, stood at the side of the stage, hearing the intro music go on and everything. And that was like the most viewed video, I think, more than any of the actual performance, you know, because people want to know.
When I was talking about you guys, when you first came out and it was kind of the first sort of things and the first singles were coming out, and I was invested. I was like, I really fucking want these guys to do well. It felt like, you know, it's like we say, like supporting a football club. It's like the guy who's playing the striker doesn't know who the fuck I am. You know, yeah. He cares about me, he cares if I'm there, but he doesn't know who I am personally. But I'm invested in his journey. I want to see him do well. And, you know, seeing you, like, KK's like one of my favorite guitar players, the end of all time, huge Priest fan. Seeing him and you holding the CD, you know, I was like, oh, I'm so happy for the guys. It's like, they're fucking, they're winning. And I want, and just purely liking that stuff and sharing that shit. I'm along for the journey. I was like, I want you guys to do well. You know, it's like I'm there. So when dates get put up, I get really excited because I can see the growth and I can see it moving. And like you say, those early adopters are incredibly important because they're the ones that are going to spread the word. You know, and they're going to be the ones that are going to be your toughest critics later on. You know, two albums, three albums down, they're going to be the ones that are like, well, hold on. Your best song is this, and you haven't beaten that yet. But they're so important because they'll keep you honest. They'll keep you kind of, you know, ready to kind of look at yourself and what the next move is. And then you've got the job of kind of getting to the next level and doing that all over again with a whole new set of fans. That must be crazy. That, like, you know, and we talked about this before. And something I want to talk about now is what we talk about when we say the next level. And that isn't a mythical world. The next level is quite obvious. You know, and one of the things you put on the post, which I thought was incredibly true, was that you said that an enormous amount of bands can't escape that kind of small venue in mentality and execution to get to being a festival band, for example, or even bigger. And that seemed to be where most bands hit brick walls. Did you find that, or are you finding that?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I said, it does seem like the hardest, or at least up until a certain point, the hardest thing in the industry is going from being a local band to a touring band, or, you know, at that sort of, or a sign band or whatever. And it's like, I was having a conversation with a band called Black Light Vice, really great guys in Southampton. And they've come to see every show we've done on the South Coast, and they've watched it go, you know, and, couple of them came when we played Southampton last year, and it was maybe 40 odd people, and then came a couple of months ago and it was 200, you know. And I was chatting to them, they said it must be weird, and like it must be mad. And I said, you got to remember, like, all of us have done that thing where you're in a local band for years, for what feels like forever, and you can sell a bunch of tickets in your hometown, and if you play 45 minutes down the road, no one fucking comes. I know what that's like. Do you know what I mean? I spent years doing it, and it's not impossible. But what it is, I feel like a lot of people will say, I'll do whatever it takes to make it, but they don't know what that whatever is. And it's putting that down on paper and going, well, here's what you need to do. And like I said before, it's about acting like a professional band before you're professional. And, you know, if you're going to compare it to football or something, it's like a lot of bands are that guy that's having a kickabout in the park or whatever, you know, a couple of times a week and hoping to get a professional contract. That's not how it works. You need to know exactly what it is that you need to do and that what people are looking for. And the other side of this, and it's something that I admit, like, I used to feel like as well, and I feel like a lot of people at, you know, a local level or whatever, it can seem like the music industry is this sort of exclusive club that you're not allowed into. And I know what it's like to feel like that, because you see the same bands get the same opportunities in different festivals and things. And all it is just supply and demand. You know, there's more great bands than there is, you know, big festivals for them to play. And so, yes, it does rotate and everything. But if you can create that demand, people will come to you.
Yeah. It's that understanding that, you know, that is within your sphere of influence. That, you know, it's not like, oh, no one gets our band or no one likes us or no, there is a sphere of influence here. You do have some control, you know, even at every level. There's elements of luck and there's elements of chance and stuff, but there are some very, very, there's the reason why bands, even at mid-level bands and B-level touring great bands, still regularly tour, because they found that the supply and demand, and they've matched it and they've made it work for them. It is something that is under your control. Like you say, though, as long as you're honest, as long as you look at yourself and go, okay, hold on, I'm playing you know, incredibly complicated prog metal. It's instrumental, and I don't look at the audience, and we it's all in black. There's no backdrop or anything like that, and all of our songs are 17 and a half minute long. You have to understand that that's not going to... There's certain doors that are already closed to you there. There's certain things that, you know, you need to play to your strengths. We talk about, like, you know, Sleep Token, you know, as being a good example of... That's not commercially successful at first, but you have to establish what your thing is, and then that demand comes in.
It's like, look at Sun-O. Do you know what I mean? You can be successful playing any style, I believe, if you do it really, really well.
Yeah.
You know.
100%. It's good quality will always out. If you're good, it's one of those things. It's like the thing. It's like the moment in the movie where someone does something, they sing or they dance or they play the piano really fucking well, and it cuts through. There's no dialogue. It cuts through because you're witnessing someone do something really good, run really fast, whatever it may be, and because it's undeniable. You know what did Zappa said? The modern virtuoso refuses to die. And he meant that people will always be impressed and always seek out the best of something. What something that looks or sounds really, really good. You know, and that's one of the things that I certainly the advice that I give to bands is to constantly write. Constantly write until you know you cannot write anymore. Try and get as many songs as you can together and get out there so you can start to go, okay, we're only going to take the absolute best. That's one of the things, ladies and gentlemen. If you listen to the Taylor Gunner's album, is that every single one of those tracks could be lifted and used as a single very easily. They could, and several have been, you know. But that I'm sure that was by design. I'm sure there's some stuff that fell by the wayside, and was like, okay, well, it's just not good enough. Sorry, it's not good as White Death. It's not good as the this type of song. That type of song. It's you know, there has to be some quality control. You can't just go, well, everything we put out, no one likes it, fuck them. There has to be some elements of realism here. I'm not to say that you don't follow your dreams, but they have to be, you know, like you say, you know, you want to be a Premiership footballer and you're not prepared to get out at 6 o'clock in the morning and run and do you ain't going to be a Premiership footballer. I'm sorry. You know, you have to be, what you lack in talent, you have to make up for in hard work. So, now we're at the stage where you're kind of getting sort of bands coming to you and you're having those conversations. Are there any sort of consistent things that seem to be coming up, that mistakes that bands are making?
I mean, something like I mentioned that seems to be the most prevalent problem for bands is, how do I keep my social media consistent when there's nothing going on?
Yeah.
And that is definitely like, make something go on regardless of what gigs you're playing or what songs you're putting out or whatever. And aside from that is, how do I take the 50 tickets that I can sell in my hometown and take it into the next city or whatever? It's like, I was speaking to a band from Liverpool and, you know, they said, well, we want to go and play in Manchester and get on these gigs in Manchester because there's a few more opportunities possibly to grow there.
Yeah.
The thing that I said to them is, well, hang on a second, because don't worry too much about getting into that next town just yet. Why not put on the absolute best gigs that you possibly can in Liverpool, you know? And something that like we're planning for next year now is we're going to put all their social media in place, build up that foundation, get them posting every day, create a real buzz. And next summer, they'll do a gig at the Outpost. The aim is to sell that out. We'll get loads of like media and videographers and whatever down, make that look like the most happening band in the world. And then I said to them, you do all that, you will get good gigs in Manchester. You will be able to pitch to festivals and things and grow from there. And it's definitely, you know, getting out of your city and going and playing in London or Manchester or Glasgow or wherever it is, you know, that's the biggest problem people face. And it's not as hard as, I mean, it's hard, but it's not as impossible as it can feel like, you know. It's just about doing the right things. And also I think that there is this sort of feeling among a lot of people that maybe aren't as aware of like how things might work of, well, we need a manager so that we can do this. And it's like, no, you need to do that so you have a, so a manager has something to come in and manage. Or same principle, like we were saying with a record label, it's, you know, I was talking to a band and they said, well, we're going to put out an album, so we want your help to get a record deal to put on that album. And it's like, well, hang on a second, we need to do all of these steps so that you'll get a record deal when you don't necessarily need one, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. It's that, like you say, you know, it's that, it's creating that demand. You know, you have to create the machine. You have to build the thing that you want to do. You know, like Tobias did with Ghost. You have to build that thing and then put it in place. There it is. Let's go. And yes, you'll make slight adjustments to the thing as you move it forward. Like Tailgunner isn't exactly the same thing as when it started. It's slightly, but it's always moved forward, but it's just moved forward and evolved. It's still very much, I know what that is and I'm comfortable with it and, it, and I know what I'm going to be getting. But there will be moves where you're moving and evolving.
One of the best pieces of advice I heard a while back, this was applied to the sense of a live show, but I think it can apply to other areas of a band as well, is imagine that you're already a stadium band. And now you're not a stadium band yet, but what would you do if you were a tribute to your own band as a stadium band?
Yeah.
And I love that. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
that's great. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. It just forces you to look at what you're doing really well. Like, yeah.
Like, well, you may be playing a venue that holds, you know, 50 people, 100 people, or whatever. If you were a tribute band to a band that's in Wembley, how would you bring that into a club sense? Do you know what I mean? And that's like us on the last tour. You know, Craig's got a couple of costume changes and there's a prop gun and, you know,
For Scream Revolution and stuff. And
And it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? It's we bought a bloody exercise step off Amazon, spray painted it, and that's an ego riser. Do you know what I mean?
Done.
It's like,
done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, you in a time when it costs like, you know, £150 to see someone in an arena, you can bring the arena to a small venue. You know, you can have that vibe. What the basic sort of building blocks that make that up, that experience, are there. Yes, of course they're scaled down, but they're there, chanting along, sing along sections, you know, this type of thing. Costume changes, they're not out of your way of doing it. You can totally do these things.
Look at Ghost when they started. Or another example, if that's not to your taste, could be AC/DC. Angus had that school uniform when they were playing in high school halls.
From day one.
Kiss had makeup when they were a club band in New York. It's like, it's already.
It's like, you know, you look at like Van Halen, one of the most famous arena rock bands of all time. Yeah. There's footage and stuff of them playing in bar bands and all kinds of small venues. But it was just Van Halen. They were just waiting to be an arena thing. They were already like, fuck, we're an arena rock band. There it is. Before we even knew what it was, we are. And build the arena around us, you know? Not we're going to try and get up to that level. We're already at that level, you know? Like, you're absolutely right about bringing up the stagecraft of what you're doing, you know, the presentation of you as an actual act. If you're just going to come on and be four guys in their jeans and T-shirt and kind of not do an awful lot, you're going to have to do not an awful lot really fucking well. You know, you're going to have to, there's got to be something for the crowd to go, what is this? And how can, because let's be honest, you know, a lot of bands were like, we really want to play Bloodstock, or we really want to play the Sophie Tent in Bloodstock, or one of the stages, the concrete stage in Download. And given that opportunity, what the fuck would you do with it? You can't just put your normal setup and go, okay, well, we've got a 45-minute set that's really good. You have, but the guy that's right the way at the fucking back who doesn't give a fuck about you, how are you entertaining him? How are you bringing him in? What are you doing? You know, you need to have those answers now before you get that gig.
That's it. That's exactly it. And the same applies, you know, not just to gigs, but to your social media, to everything you do. You can't act at the level. Okay, you might not be able to do it in a budget sense, and that's fine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you can do it in every other aspect of the quality of what you're doing, whether that's your email list, your social media, how you approach an EP campaign or a single or whatever it is, you know.
Visually now, all the elements are there now. You can, at the absolute base level, you can look like the finished article from a social media point of view. You can look as good as Metallica's one, you know, Iron Maiden's one, or whoever, you know, Spirit Box's one, or Load's one. You can look as good as that. It just takes time and working with people who are good with art and, you know, good with presentation tools and good at, you know, video and editing stuff. You just have to put the time in. You can look as good as that. You might be found out when they press play, but you can at least look that good.
Like, and people might listen and say, well, I've not got the money to hire a great artist, or I've not got the money to pay a brilliant photographer or whatever. Fair enough. But everyone's got a decent camera on their smartphone. And if you take the time, go out in, you know, your city where you live, have a chat about, okay, this is what we're going to wear. So you don't just, you know, turn up and someone's not shaved for a couple of days or like whatever it is. If you actually have that conversation beforehand, go and find the coolest possible location that you can and get someone's girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever that, you know, has got a bit of an eye for taking a photo on an iPhone camera or smartphone camera.
Yeah.
Sit there and find a free photo editing app or whatever. There you go. And you've not paid anything for it, you know.
Yeah, the best picture I saw of the last tour with you guys, I know because I was standing next to them when they took the photo, was just a black and white photo. And I was like, that is fucking, they have, that person has nailed that. Everybody was in position. I was like, that's, you, a professional Todd wouldn't have got that. It was absolutely on the money. And it was took on someone's fucking phone. Christ, the, you know, that movie, The Creator, was made on fucking, on a phone. You know, it is doable. You've just got to find and seek these things out, you know. The last thing you kind of want to talk about before I let you go, mate, is something like I alluded to near the beginning, but I want to talk a little bit now, is of having a good attitude and a good professional attitude in the business. How you conduct yourself around others and how you talk to people and how you conduct yourself online and in social media circumstances. It's one of the things that I think for me has definitely carried Tailgunner forward, you know, really good professional way of talking to people, especially when it goes wrong and things don't work out well. And I just wanted you to, if you could talk a little bit about that, and how, you know, you almost have to have a moment where you go, from now on, we are going to deal with things professionally as it should be done, even if we're a massive band, to everything in between.
Well, that's, you know, literally what we did before we launched is I said to the others, it's whoever we deal with, whether it's, you know, a big promoter or it's, you know, the guy doing sound or whatever, or the person on the bar or on the door or whatever it is, you know, treat them with respect and speak to them professionally. And it's that rule of the same in music as in life, is just don't be a dick. Yeah. Just be a good person and be, you know, easy to work with and everything. And in a more, you know, sort of palpable sense, reply to your emails the same day. Do you know what I mean? At least the next day. You know, if you want to work with Pete, if you want to play Bloodstock or whatever, you know, it starts at the very, very ground up. And no one wants to work with you if you take 10 days to reply to an email, you know. And you notice that as well as you go up. Yeah. It's the people that are the bigger players in the industry. If I send an email to, I don't know, someone I've dealt with, KK Downing's manager or something, I'll get a reply in 15 minutes. And I know that he's fucking busy. He's got more important people to talk to than me. But at the same time, he's sat there working and he's gone, okay, I'm going to reply to that now, you know. And it's, if you can do that as a band, even if you've got nothing else, and if someone gives you an opportunity and you reply 10 minutes later because you're on it, you know, put an email notification on your phone or something. Understand that, you know, it might not be that instant because everyone's got day jobs or whatever. Everyone gets fag breaks, or everyone gets breaks on, you know, you can always reply 3-4 hours later in the same day. And that, it's so simple, but that puts you above like 90% of bands. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, well, yeah. Look, let's for the ladies and gentlemen listening at home, let's take this, the tiny little thing here now as a case study. I sent a message to Tom. I said, I love what you're planning to do, and I think it's fucking fantastic. And you need to, I'm 100% with that. Whatever you need, give me a shout. We had a quick back and forth. I said, listen, the door's always open. Come on the show. Let's talk about it. I'm sure people will be interested. Let's have a conversation. You were like, okay, when? Now, we could have gone, okay, well, we'll do it next year at some point. And then it's March and we might get something sorted. Then it was like, I was like, okay, I'm free this day. You were okay, I'm free this day. And it was like, okay, it's the 2nd of January we're recording this now. We haven't like waited a week or whatever. So it's the first moment we got. We go, okay, let's do it. Now, from this, I've got a content for the podcast. This will be a podcast that I can put out. I can chop that up and do things with that. You will have this as something that can go out as with Tail Gunner and something that can go out with your project. And it came and was born from us spending, you know, an hour talking now. But over the conversation, quickly put it together. And I think that's how we even did this show when we had all four of you together. That didn't take long to put together. It was just like, look, let's get it done. When are you free? When am I free? Let's go and let's move forward. That's how you get things done.
Something to bring in actually is get a band calendar. There's plenty of free apps. You know, don't get sucked into that cliche of, okay, let's form a band. When should we practice? Well, I can do Tuesday evenings or I can do whatever.
Yeah.
Get a fucking calendar. And it's, you know, now, and this actually ties into my earlier point of replying quickly to emails. We've got a calendar. We've got all the gigs and whatever else we're doing on it. We've also got, okay, this person's on holiday here or this person's at this or whatever. If we get an offer through and say, hey, I run this festival, would you like to play Saturday here? I don't need to contact all the others and wait for an answer and let me check with my boss or whatever. I can look on the calendar and go, okay, that date's open within 5 minutes and go, yes, please, we'll play that. You know,
well, the business works way further ahead than people think.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Vakken was booking for next year, last year. You know, talking about we're talking a year ahead, 2 years ahead. That's how far people are looking for. And if you're difficult to get in touch with or not forthcoming and stuff, at the offset they'll be like, we just haven't got the time to deal with the chancers who aren't going to be. Because if you're flaky now and if you're not getting back to us now, are you going to be on stage on time? Are you going to have all your gear together? What the fuck? It just doesn't bode well for you, you know. And like you say, having a calendar in place and knowing where you're going to be, you know, knowing what you're going to be doing. Is one of the most professional things that you can have. You're having a conversation with someone and they turn around and go, this has just cropped up. I need you to play whatever, this festival here, can you do it? And you can say almost in the next half an hour, 50 minutes, yes, I can. You're going to go straight to the top of their list for bands. Yep. They're going to go, okay, if we have a band falling out on this next show, you're in. That's how you get into those slots. Like being reliable is almost as important, maybe more important than being fucking good. You know, just being alive on stand-up.
Like I was about to say, because, you know, there might be people listening that go, well, I've just started out and I've got no fans and I can't even sell, you know, the 50 tickets or whatever to make a great video from whatever it is.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter if, you know, it really, really doesn't. If you've got, you know, good music and you can reply really quick to emails and you can present yourself more professionally than 90% of the bands in your city, you'll get the opportunities that other bands that might be able to sell more tickets won't necessarily get.
Well, you had it with what was it, Call of the Wild, was it, where you were asked back? You played once and then you're asked back for another festival. What was that? Which one was that?
We did Wildfire. So they,
that's it. Yeah, yeah. We played it first.
Headlines last year.
Yeah, and I'm telling you now, that was because of how you acted. The first time, I'm sure they were like, you know, okay, well, these guys are great. We know that, but they were really good to work with. Ladies and gentlemen, when bands are getting booked for these festivals from large to small, if you're a dickhead, you're not going to get booked. They don't care how good your band is. They'll just be like, look, it's just not, no band's worth that trouble. No band's just, and then it's the same with tour. If a band's going to take you on tour with them, they just don't want you to be trouble. They just want you to fucking do what you're doing for your 30 minutes of fucking, you know, not fuck things up, you know, not wreck buses and cause problems and fall out with people and argue and all that. It's just not worth it. No band's that good that someone would put up with that. We've all heard of bands getting chucked off tours. That's the fucking reason why. You know what I mean? If you're difficult, you know, you don't even get through the door.
The flip side of that as well is, you know, I was actually having this conversation with a band that I was speaking to for this business recently. This is years ago. I played in a local band and there was another local band not going anymore, unfortunately, called Western Sand, and they're from Southampton. And basically, they just did all the things that we've been talking about. They weren't the biggest band, they weren't the most popular band, but they did all the things that we've been talking about right. And there was a promoter that used to, you know, put on the local bands for not huge gigs, but when these gigs for maybe bands that were playing for, you know, tail gunner size, basically, but playing to 200 sort of people, 300 sort of people, he would be the guy that books the local openers. And this band became his go-to for the local openers for 2, 3, 4 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And eventually he ended up booking the tour for Thin Lizzy. And he's going, well, who am I going to get for a support band? Realistically, Thin Lizzy don't need help selling tickets. They're going to sell tickets anyway. Who do I know that's really professional, that's going to go on, do their half an hour, pack their shit down very fast, answer all my emails on time?
Yeah,
I know it is. And all of a sudden, this band that, again, they weren't the biggest or most popular, they might sell 30 tickets a show, but all of a sudden, they've got a tour with Thin Lizzy because they knew how to do the basics.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. You're, everybody wonders why in the local scene, it's always the same band that's supporting the big metal act that comes through. Why is it always the same band? Who do they know? Well, I'm sure they do know a few people, but even if they were dickheads, it wouldn't matter who you knew. If they were troubled for the support to support the big band, they wouldn't get asked back. I don't care if they were the brother, son, mother, daughter of the promoter. They wouldn't get asked. What you want, like you say, is just someone who's going to come in and fill that time slot with the least amount of fucking around, because that's all you want. And that's why those bands always get asked back. This is the sole reason. Hopefully those bands are good as well. You know, but that's the thing. You just don't want someone to fuck around. You know, what are we saying here, Tom? What we're saying is that good rock and roll and good metal bands should be polite, punctual. Everything Lemmy told us not to do. Which is...
that's the music industry in the 21st century. But do all that after your show. There's plenty. Still, you know, there's plenty of room for that. Do it after your show. You know, but that's the thing as well, is that should be the biggest satisfaction for anyone. You know, it is me, and it doesn't matter who it is. Doesn't matter if it's Lemmy or Bon Scott or whatever. Yeah. All of those guys, their biggest fucking drug of the night was leaving that crowd going, oh my fucking God, and then go and get smashed, then go and smoke a joint or do a line or whatever. You know, don't do it off the back of the fucking venue toilet or something, but like...
It's because it's like when we talk about, let's take someone like Bon Scott, you know, a legendary sort of hellraiser, drinker, womanizer, all the rest of it. But I will caveat it by saying that they probably played fucking every single bar in fucking Australia twice in the same fucking year. They must have, they toured the shit out of that stuff. They were playing everything. And he was trying everything on stage. He brought bagpipes out because he used to be a pipe. In a pipe and drum band, they fucking dress like, we've all seen the Let the Rock video where he's dressed like a fucking priest. They were trying everything they could.
Yeah.
Even though they were AC, they're AC/DC. They don't fucking need any gimmicks. They're AC/DC. But even still, he was like, I'm telling you now, they played a fucking ton of gigs. And I'm sure he had a fight with a few people. But one of the things that a lot of people talked and I know who had the pleasure of meeting Bon was how nice a guy he was.
Exactly.
You know, and we talk about... We talk about Lemmy. Yeah, Hellraiser, you know, did his ton of speed and all the rest of it, and, you know, but what a nice guy he was. And then look at, like, Vinny and fucking, and that, it's like, in Dimebag, like, yeah, drunk a whole fucking lot, doing crazy stuff and all the rest of it. What would everybody remember? What fucking nice guys they were, because they were good to have on tour. They were a good laugh. They were good to work with. I watched Vinny, and he was just the best mixer I've ever seen in my life. He would go into a room and all of a sudden he would work with everybody. He was laughing and joking and what drink are you having? And it's that goes in a phenomenal amount of way to being in a good band and being a well-remembered band.
This little details like that, and, you know, things that we've learned and that people have told me and things. If you turn up to a show, you go in, you know, do your sound check and, be professional, get your gear on, blah, 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 blah. When you pack down and you fuck off to the fucking chip shop or Tesco or whatever it is, on your way out, speak to the sound tech and go, I'm just going to shop, mate. Do you need anything? They're going to say no. But when you play, you'll sound good.
Yeah.
Because
I remember one of the quickest hacks I got taught when I was in a band many, many years ago was buy the sound guy a pint.
Yeah.
And it covered fucking so much ground. He's like, oh, yeah, love it. Lager top, yeah, sound. And you go, okay, there you go, mate, nice one. And he'd go, all right, mate, cheers. And so then you sound checking 20, 30 minutes later, and it'll give you a little bit more room to manoeuvre.
Yeah.
You know, get a little bit more. And it was one of those things I was like, oh, shit. It seems like if you're nice to someone, it works. You know, it's actually like, that's how it's meant to be. Like, you know, what a quick Lemmy story. One of my friends was doing the lights for Headcat, the Lemmy's other project. And he was doing, like, why do we doing the lights? Lemmy said, oh, can we have a bit more of this and a bit less of that? And he was like, yeah, sound. And he goes, what's your name? And his mate goes, oh, it's John. He goes, cheers, John. That's Lemmy.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't need to do any of that, but that's all hardwired into him from when he was coming through the ranks, if you will, and coming through the thing. Being nice to people, being good to your fans, good to your audience, and good to the people that are, you know, are helping you, because they are there to help you. You know, they are there to kind of make it. Everybody wants a great gig. No one wants a shit gig. Everybody, the audience, the promoters, the venue, everybody wants a good gig. That's the main goal we're all trying to drive at. If you're not trying to drive at that, you shouldn't be at the fucking show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Listen, can we talk about the name of this project then? Have you settled on the name then?
Yeah, it's gonna be BMF, and then there'll be some sort of under title of BMF Media, possibly.
Yeah.
I just you can't really categorize or sum up exactly what I'm doing in a name, so I just thought I'd go for something that sounds fucking cool, basically. And you know, because I like the flip side of it is I can present this in a professional sense. So it's, what's the name of it? Oh, BMF Media. Could be anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what does it stand for? Bad motherfucker media.
Okay. It's already set its stall out that this is what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's always wonderful to talk to Thomas. It's always nice to get a little window into kind of how he's doing. And I like checking in on the guys and checking in what's going on. We expect great things of Tailgunner, ladies and gentlemen. We've said this before, you know, everybody messaged me and asking when we're going to get. I promised that I'd get Sammy on the show. I promised to Sammy we'd have a great time. And I think that's going to be what I'm looking forward to. But more than anything, I'm really looking forward to what happens with BMF, mate. I think it's fantastic. You're starting it for all the right reasons. You are exactly the person that should be doing it. And I'm looking forward to those first bands. Do you know what I'm looking forward to? The first EPK that comes across my desk.
Yeah.
And it's like, you need to check out this, Coop. And I'll be like, it better be fucking good. Better be fucking good. But I'm so looking forward to that. Like, so, ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure as always to have Tom Tieson on from Tailgunner. And now BMF. And now we can see it now, BMF. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Nice one. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Okay, let me just... there we go.